Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our second installment of Hilchos Pesach. And Amir Tzashem, next week we'll have the third, where we'll talk about kashering the kitchen and all that that entails. But tonight I wanted to focus a little bit on the Bedikas Chametz. Before I do that, though, I just wanted to mention one important halacha regarding products on Pesach. And this is something that I think is confusing to people every year. And there's all these lists that are put out, and there's books, and there's this book, and that book, and this list, and that list. And it's all very, very confusing. So I just want to clarify things a little bit. So hopefully that will allow us to know exactly what's usr, what's mutter, what's chumra, what's a minhag. And that way we can hopefully put us at ease a little bit. So first of all, we discussed last week that there's not only a prohibition against eating chametz, but a person is also not allowed to own chametz on Pesach. I'm not allowed to own any chametz, which is why we sell our chametz that we do own. And that prohibition to own chametz is on even a little bit of chametz, even if it's a kezias, even less than a kezias. If it's edible chametz, that's a problem. Any real chametz that's owned, the only way to not violate this prohibition is if the chametz is what's called not ra'ui la'achilas kelev, which means that if it's inedible, even to a dog, even a dog wouldn't touch this chametz, so then you don't violate the prohibition of owning actual chametz with that type of chametz. So for example, you have some sort of bread, an old roll that's all moldy and whatever, and you know, you would give this to a dog, he would run in the other direction, you know, nobody's going to eat this, even a dog wouldn't eat this roll. So that type of roll, you don't violate these prohibitions of Bal Yeroa, Bal Yimatzeh, of owning chametz for that type of chametz. But short of that, if a dog would eat it, and dogs obviously don't have are not as particular about their food as humans are, so even if we wouldn't necessarily eat it, but if a dog would eat it, then that type of chametz is problematic and it cannot be owned on Pesach. That's all for what we call chametz be'en, which is actual chametz, rolls, crackers, cookies, pretzels, things like that. However, if you have what we call a ta'aruvas chametz, which is a mixture that contains chametz, so ketchup, for example, is a mixture that contains chametz. It has a certain type of alcohol in it, and you know, or whatever the ingredients are. So ketchup, you know, is an example. Other things that are common products, which are mixtures of chametz. They're not cooks. They're not cakes and cookies and bread, but they're mixtures of chametz. So when it comes to mixtures of chametz, where there is some sort of chametz there, as long as the chametz is not ro'i la'achilas adam, which means as long as it's not edible for human beings, it's not fit for human consumption, so then you are allowed to own that chametz on Pesach. You're allowed to own that chametz, even if a dog would eat it, but if it's a taruvas chametz and it's not ro'i la'achilas adam, so you're allowed to own that chametz on Pesach. Therefore, most what we would call hygiene products, so you're talking about shampoos, creams, soaps, all of these types of products, technically, even if they contain some element of chametz in them, and some of them, especially like the new, you know, the new age stuff, all has oatmeal and you know, all of this literally, you know, actual chametz mixed into it. It's not a piece of cake, but it's certainly a taruvis of chametz. As long as a human being would not eat it, and it's not fit for human consumption, so then you're okay. You're allowed to own it on Pesach. You still can't eat it, not that you would want to eat it, but you still can't eat these things because we have a principle called achshavei, that even if something is not fit for human consumption, but if you decide, I want to eat it, you know, I'm hungry and I'm going to eat this shampoo or whatever it might be, so then to you, that becomes food, that becomes something significant, and you know, and that's problematic. So you still can't eat it, obviously, but you can own it, and not only can you own it, but you can even use it. You can even use it. So you have, like, let's say a hand cream, which has oatmeal in it. So I know I'm sounding like a radical here, but technically speaking, as long as it's a hand cream and it's a mixture of chametz, there's some oatmeal mixed into it, you know, if it's the majority is oatmeal, that might be a problem. But if, let's say, it's a minority, it's batel berov, certainly on a d'oraisa level, then you're allowed to own it, and you're allowed to use it on Pesach. It's not fit for human consumption. Things that go in our mouths, we're a little bit more machmir about. That we're a little bit more strict about, because we don't want anything that has anything to do with chametz going in our mouths. So that's why, you know, when it comes to all of these lists, we do check to make sure that our toothpaste is on the list, and we'll have a couple of the books here from the Star K. They have a nice list. We'll have a couple of them for reference here in the shul. But we make sure that our toothpastes and our mouthwash and things like that, lipsticks, you know, anything that's going on or in the mouth, those things should be double-checked just to make sure that they are completely chametz-free, because we don't want to put any chametz, even a mixture of chametz, and even if it's not, you know, fit for human consumption, we wouldn't want to put any chametz anywhere near our mouths. So that's why we are careful about those types of products. But anything else that's not going, you know, on or in our mouth, but it's just a cream or it's a lotion or it's a shampoo or whatever the case might be, those types of things, technically speaking, there is no problem to own them. Some people, there are some families who have a minhag to get rid of all of that stuff as well. So there is a minhag out there to get rid of all of that stuff as well. And that's why if you look at these lists, they list everything. They'll tell you, you know, which hand creams and which shampoos and soap and all of these things. Which ones are completely chametz free? Because there are families that have the custom; they want to get rid of every ounce of chametz. I don't care if it's a taruvas chametz. I don't care that it's not fit for human consumption. I don't want to have anything to do with chametz on Pesach. If that's your family custom, great, good. That's a nice chumrah. It's your family custom, and you're more than welcome to do it. But recognize that it's a custom and it's a little bit of a chumrah. But at least on an Ikar HaDin level, at the basic level of the halacha, it's not something that's absolutely necessary, and therefore you don't necessarily have to go through all of these lists making sure that every product that's in your home is 100% chametz free. Again, you have to make sure that it's not fit for human consumption, which sometimes can be a little tricky. In fact, some poskim discuss things like the aerosol deodorants and things like that, which might actually contain some level of alcohol, and although it's not something that we would ever entertain to consume that type of a thing, but a person is out in the middle of nowhere and they're desperate for some alcohol. There are all sorts of tricks to denature things and to work with them to get the alcohol out and to consume the alcohol. Believe it or not, there are people who will do these kind of things. So you do have to be a little bit careful in terms of what's considered fit for human consumption and what's not. But generally speaking, most of these things are not really fit for human consumption, and therefore you don't really have to make yourself crazy going through the whole list, unless that's your family custom. But again, I just want to stress that when it comes to things that we put on or in our mouth, so then those things we are more careful about, and we do ensure that there's absolutely no chametz on them or in them. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about the actual bedikas chametz, and then we'll move. Hopefully, we'll have time to move to the night of the Seder and some of the mitzvos that pertain to the evening of the Seder. We have a mitzvah we discussed last week that on a Torah level, on a Deoraisa level, a person could just nullify the chametz. You mevatel the chametz. You say kol chamira, and that's it. The chametz is null and void, and it's meaningless and ownerless, and that's fine on a Deoraisa level. But midrabbanan, on a rabbinic level, we know that we have an obligation to do what we call bedikas chametz, which I like to refer to as a search and destroy mission. Essentially, that's what you're doing. You're searching for the chametz. And part of that is, once you find it, you're going to destroy it the next day. That's when we burn the chametz, biur chametz, sreifas chametz. And that's why we know that we only make one bracha, right? Al biur chametz, because it's really one process. It's not two separate mitzvos of bedika and biur. It's one process of biur chametz. I'm ridding my house of the chametz, search and destroy. So that's essentially what we're doing. It's an obligation midrabbanan. And this obligation begins at Seisach Kochavim, which is nightfall, on the night before Pesach, right? So Erev Pesach at night, that's when we do the Bedikas Chametz. The halacha is that you're not supposed to eat a meal even a half hour before the Zman. So let's say, it's hard to say exactly, I don't know exactly when Shkia is going to be, on that date. But let's say about around Shkia time is when a person should already refrain from beginning their dinner. You can eat dinner before that if you want, you know, while it's still a little bit light outside, or you can wait till after the bedika and eat dinner after that. But once already you get into that right around Shkia, where it's about a half hour before it's Seisach Kochavim, so a person should not sit down to a meal. We're nervous. You sit down to a meal, you sit down on the couch, and then next thing you know, it's time to Higia Zman Kriyas Melshel Shachris. So we want to try to avoid that, and that's why we say no meals before that. We have the custom that that we put out small pieces of bread. You can even buy them prepackaged, but you can buy stale pieces of bread prepackaged for, I think, you know, the low price of about $9.99 or something like that. I don't know how much they cost. But you can buy them in any of the Judaica stores, or you can just take a piece of bread that you have in your house and wrap it up the old-fashioned way. But you can, we are meant, I guess, to put out these small pieces of bread. They should be less than a kezayis, small pieces. Just as a, you know, piece of advice, they shouldn't be crumbly pieces of bread, right? Try to make sure that they're packaged well. It's a question why exactly we do this. Some say it's to avoid a bracha of atala, because if we're making the bracha of al biur chametz, and, you know, our families have done such a good job of cleaning the house, we don't find, you know, not even one piece of chametz. So some want to claim that maybe that's a bracha of atala. The consensus seems to be that even if that would happen, it probably would not be a bracha of atala, because the mitzvah is to search and destroy. So I searched. If I didn't find anything, so I didn't find anything. But I still did the mitzvah. So many say that it's not a bracha of atala, but some do want to make that claim. Certainly, al pi Kabbalah, based on the Kabbalistic sources, you know, there certainly is reason to do this. And the Arizal was the one who said you should actually put 10 out, which is what we do. And we put these out. It's also a good idea to either write down, you know, where you put them, because, you know, sometimes the bidika takes like an extra hour because you can't find that tenth piece. So it's always a good idea to just jot down a little list of where you put them. There is a question if a person is doing an early bidika chametz, which we mentioned last week, we'll just repeat it again. And the halacha is that as long as you're leaving your house within 30 days of Pesach, so I'm going away for the, let's, I'm not, but I'm, let's say a person says that they're going away for, don't get nervous, right? Let's say a person says, you know, I'm going away for the whole Pesach, so the halacha is that as long as you're leaving within 30 days, you have to do bedikas chametz, and we do bedikas chametz the night before you leave. So if I'm leaving tomorrow, I would do bedikas chametz tonight at Seisach Kochavim, you know, with the candle and with the feather and however else I'm doing it. You don't make a bracha if you do an early bedikah. And there is a question, do I put out the 10 pieces if I'm doing an early bedikah? And there's a machlokas about this. Because if you say the reason for putting out the 10 pieces is because of the bracha, because you want to avoid a bracha levatala, so if I'm doing an early bedikah chametz, I don't make a bracha. Because the bracha is only made when I do it on time, the night before Erev Pesach. So if the reason is because of the bracha, so I should not put out 10 pieces. But there are others who claim that the reason is not because of the bracha. So there are different practices if you're doing an early bedikah.
Didn't you say this week, I may have missed
yeah.
that if you're going away, and you sell the entire house,
yeah.
that you don't have to do bedikah?
Yes, so I did say that. If you sell your entire house, then that's correct. You don't have to do bedikah. But I did mention that there are opinions who say that a bedikah is also a personal chiv. It's not just a chiv upon your house, but it's something that you should really be doing. And that's why we recommend that you rent out your entire house with the exception of one room. Well, with the exception of one room. So that one room, you'll do bedikas chametz in that one room. That's, you know, that's always the recommendation. So there are different minhagim, whether you put out the pieces or don't put out the pieces. You know, if you have them in, great. If not, you know, you could do it. It's not a big deal. People don't like to do bedikas chametz without putting them out. So you can put them out. It's fine. But that is the halacha about putting out the pieces. We do bedikas chametz no matter how well we clean. So even if we clean very well and we don't have little kids running around at home, and we know there's no chametz anywhere in this house except for in the kitchen, you know, there's really nothing to worry about. We still do bedikas chametz everywhere. We look everywhere. The idea I once heard described in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that the nature of bedikas chametz is like a final inspection. The bedikas chametz is the final inspection right before Pesach, where you go through the entire house and make sure that everything was done properly, everything was cleaned properly. In fact, the way it was told to me was that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, when he did bedikas chametz, his wife, you know, cleaned the house beforehand, and he, you know, would open the closet, would take a look, everything looks like it's in order, good. Close the closet, move on to the next room. He didn't necessarily, even though there's talk about going to every crack and nook and cranny and chorim musdakim, but, you know, it depends how well you clean. If you cleaned really well, then, you know, it might not be necessary to look at every single nook and cranny. But it's important, certainly, to go through every room and to go through all of the places where you bring chametz, just to make sure those areas are clean, because sometimes you do that and you realize, oh my gosh, we forgot to clean one closet, or we forgot to look in this drawer, we forgot to clean this room. So that's important that bedikas chametz is done in that way as a final inspection. A person should check their pockets. I think we may have mentioned this last week as well. We do sometimes shove candy, you know, pretzels, liquor, whatever else we might put in our pockets. So it's important to check your pockets for chametz. That does not have to be done the night of bedikas chametz. You can, you know, clean your pockets out in advance. Sometimes it's very tedious to be going through, you know, all of your pockets the night of bedikas chametz. So you can do that in advance and just you know, look at the closet and make sure that you went through your pockets to clean them. Our minhag is to use a candle. It's based on the Gemara. The Gemara talks about using the using a candle to make sure that we can look in the cracks and the crevices and all the nooks and crannies and make sure that we don't miss any small pieces of cookie or pretzel. Some have the minhag to turn off the lights. That way the candle works better. Some don't turn off the lights, whatever your personal minhag is. If you're concerned about a fire, you can certainly use a flashlight, you know, to make sure. Some, you know, some of the poskim do say that the minog, you know, is to use a candle. It's a nice thing, you know, ner neshama, nishmas adam. So there is something nice in terms of the minog of using a candle. But certainly if you're nervous about bringing it into, closed spaces, so then you can certainly use a flashlight as well. Before we begin, we make the bracha of al biur chametz. We try also not to speak. Certainly until we commence the bedikah, because a person can never talk in between the bracha and actually performing the mitzvah. The poskim say it's better not to talk throughout the entire bedikah, because really the bracha is going on the whole bedikas chametz, so you go through the whole house, and then, you know, after that you can shmooze. Obviously any speech that's necessary for the bedikah, you know, did you check that room, did you check the other room, that's certainly okay. That's part of the, that's part of the bedikas chametz, that's certainly okay. But otherwise, just schmoozing or whatever the case might be, answering the phone, you know, should wait until after bedikas chametz, if possible. If you cannot do the bedikah, you can appoint a shaliach to do it. If a person is stuck, they can't get home that night, you know, they got tied up somewhere, they're traveling, they got delayed, they can appoint a shaliach to do the bedikah. And so too, the balabayis can appoint, you know, members of his household as a shaliach to do it. The balabayis doesn't have to go through every single room, you know, himself to check. You know, the wife, his wife can check some areas, he can check some areas, kids can check some areas, assuming that, you know, you trust your kids to do a good job. But, you know, you can certainly split up the work. One should also check their car on the night of bedikas chametz. So just make sure, you know, cars should be cleaned before that. And make sure that night, after you're done in the house, just go out to the car, you know, with a flashlight or whatever the case is. Just look around, make sure that it was cleaned properly, that you don't have any, you know, bags of cookies stashed in the glove compartment, and that's also what we do that night. If a person is only checking their car, then they don't make a bracha, but generally we make the bracha in our house, and then we're going out to the car afterwards. A person should also check their office, or if they have a workspace, you know, at their office, they should check that area. The post can talk about that if the office is close by, you should actually check it that night as well. So after you're done in your house, let's say you work in town, you know, it's a 5-minute drive, so you check your house and then, you know, you get in the car and drive 5 minutes to your office and check the office at night, the night of bedikas chametz. Obviously, if you work in the city, or, you know, it's not practical to schlep into the city at night to do bedikas chametz, so then you can check it during the day. When you're there, you can do bedikas chametz during the day. You don't have to be there the night before. You know, you can do it during the day. Just clean it and make sure that there's no chametz in those areas. But that place, but wherever you work, you know, should be checked as well. It's interesting. I'm going to check the shul. Like, I come here afterwards. I come after I'm done in my house. I come here and I do bedikas chametz in the shul, because the shul is also it's the space that belongs to all of us, and we have to make sure it's chametz free. So we have to do bedikas chametz on the shul as well. It should be done at Seis HaKochavim if possible. Obviously, if there's some sort of delay, you're not going to be home from work or whatever the case is. So then you should try to do it as soon as possible. Try not to delay it, but try to do it as close to Seis HaKochavim as possible. And after the bedikas chametz, the Baal HaBayis says kol chamira, which is essentially a bittul chametz. We nullify all the chametz, whatever we have not found or we're unaware of, we nullify it. Not everyone in the family has to say it, just the Baal HaBayis, you know, has to say it. But it is a statement, and we're trying to affect something halachic, so we really should be understanding what we're saying. So if we don't know, it's in Aramaic. If you don't understand the Aramaic, so you can look, use an art scroll, sitter, they have a translation on the side, and you know, try to understand what we're saying. One can say it in English also. It's better to say it in Aramaic. That's the minhag, to say it in Aramaic. But, you know, but if you look in the side and you see what it means, then that's fine. If not, then it can be said in English as well. Some say it 3 times. That's a matter of custom. The reason why we say it in Aramaic is interesting, because You know, in halacha, we're very careful about bread. You know, we don't like to throw bread. We don't like to waste bread. You know, bread is considered a davar chashuv. It's considered a significant food item, and we don't want to mess around with it. So here, we're nullifying bread, and we're saying that whatever bread we might have in our house that we're not aware of is like afra de ara, is like the dust of the land, and we're not interested in the tefker. So it's, you know, we say that in Aramaic. We don't want, you know, they talk about, we don't want the mekatrigim, we don't want the prosecutors to be hearing this. You know, it's bread, so we're careful. We say it in Aramaic, in a foreign language. Even if a person made a shaliach to do the bedikas chametz, they should still say they call chamira themselves. So after the shaliach is done and tells them, you know, okay, I'm giving you the okay, the house is clean, I checked it for you, so then you should say the kol chamira wherever you are, and you say it that evening. We're going to say it again after we burn the chametz, but we say it that night for the first time. Okay, just a couple of halachos regarding the day of Erev Pesach. So we know, we discussed already last week, we discussed the prohibition to eat matzah. We don't eat matzah on Erev Pesach. We don't eat any matzah meal products. We discussed that some extend that minhag to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Some extend it as far back as Purim. But that's one halacha. Then we have what's called Tainus Bechoros. We have the fast of the firstborn. The reason why the firstborn fast Erev Pesach is because this was a trying time for us. We escaped by the skin of our teeth, so to speak, from Mitzrayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu killed all of the firstborn of the Mitzrayim. We made it out alive, and therefore we fast before Pesach in recognition of that fact. We actually don't fast because we come and hear a siyum, and the minhag is to hear a siyum. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach once gave a whole detailed explanation as to why we dafka make a siyum, because it's a strange minhag. If it's a fast day, why not fast? You know, but we dafka make a siyum, and he explained that the Bechorim used to be the ones who would do the avot in the Beis Hamikdash. But because of our part in the Chet HaEgel, that was taken away from us, and it was given to the Levim and to the Kohanim. But at the same time, we now have the ability to study Torah, right? Instead of doing the avoda, so our nechama, our comfort, so to speak, is that, okay, so we can't do the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash, but we can still study Torah. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach explained that because of that, we dafka make a siyum on Tanis Bechoros to show that even though we can't do the avoda, we're sad about that, but at least we're happy that we can learn Torah. So we make a siyum, and that's the minhag, that we make a siyum on Erev Pesach. Anyone who's a Bechor should fast until the siyum. Obviously, sometimes people get, you know, they forget and they have a cup of coffee or a cup of water before Shachar, but really you should wait until after the siyum to eat. The minhag is that if a father is not a firstborn, but he has a firstborn child, so the minhag is that the father should go to the siyum in place of the child. If he misses a siyum, then it's not so clear that he actually has to fast in place of the child. We're usually not that machmir, but the father generally does go for the child, even if he's not the firstborn himself. We can eat chametz until the end of the fourth hour. Yeah.
Question: instead of attending a
siyum,
can one attend a bris?
No. So bris is not recognized as a reason in and of itself to break one's fast. It's dafka a siyum. So why? Maybe it's related to that explanation of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Maybe that's why. So we're allowed to eat chametz until the end of the fourth halachic hour of the day. Yeah.
Is one allowed to go into Pesach?
Generally not.
So then, if someone was to fast,
so if they're fasting, they would have to. Meaning that's an established timus. So if it's an established timus and you miss the siyum, you know, I once heard of a case. I mean, I don't know of any cases personally. Usually, people manage to make, you know, Baruch Hashem, in this community, we have plenty of shuls, plenty of minyanim with siyumim. But you know, you go to an out of town place and someone's traveling, they can very easily miss the siyum. So I once heard of a case of a person missed the siyum and he fasted Erev Pesach. So if you have to, you have to. It's an established fast. I mean, generally, a person wouldn't fast voluntarily going into Pesach. We don't eat matzah, but I mean, not much else you can eat, I guess. You know, you can eat Pesach thick stuff, but that's an established fast. So that's a little bit different.
Women were also victims of the Makos Bechoros, so. Does that mean that they would have to fast also?
I think it was only the firstborn males that were killed in Mitzrayim, if I'm not mistaken.
Wasn't the women?
Did we discuss this last year?
Yeah, we did.
I forgot I also forgot what the conclusion was. So Herbert, we're going to discuss it again this year. I have to check my email and see if I have an email from you.
Right?
Yeah.
Unless the level, then the kohana kahuna goes back.
Then. Right. So I don't know what's going to happen then. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah,
I'm excited. But, okay. So the we have an Isser. We have a, we're allowed to eat chametz until the end of the fourth halachic hour, which is also the time that's known as Sof Zman Tfila. It's also the latest time for Shacharis. So we publish it. It's around, I don't recall offhand exactly, but it's usually around 10:30 or so, 10:45. You know, we'll publish it exactly what the time is. But a person technically is allowed to own chametz for another halachic hour, until the end of the fifth halachic hour, and then a person is no longer allowed to own chametz at that time. That's why we make sure to do bior chametz, to burn the chametz by the end, before the end of that fifth halachic hour. We try to burn a kezayis of chametz, you know, try to make sure that you save a kezayis of chametz to burn, to fulfill this mitzvah of bior chametz. And then after bior chametz, we recite this this paragraph of kol chamira. We recite the final bittul after that time. One important halacha that many people, you know, aren't aware of is that at the end of the fifth hour, chametz has to be out of your property. So just if you take the bag of chametz from your kitchen, you know, the garbage in your kitchen that has some bread in it, and you throw it into the trash can on the side of your house, that's not good enough. Because you still own the trash can on the side of your house. It's in your property. And even if you take the trash can and you move it to the street, it's still in your can. So it's still in your property, and it's your chametz. So it's a problem. To actually throw the garbage bags on the street, I don't think is something that we would recommend. And you know, it's that would probably be a chilul Hashem if all the Jews threw their trash, you know, into the street before Pesach. But there are places that will collect your garbage for you. Before, I believe the Woodmere Fire Department, which has a bior chametz, I think they have a garbage truck there also, if I'm not mistaken. And you can bring your last couple of trash bags that have chametz in them. Again, we're not concerned about, you know, stam trash. We're concerned about chametz. So if you have chametz, you can, you know, take it there and make sure it's off of your property before the end of the fifth halachic hour. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the night of the Seder. On the night of the Seder, we have essentially five mitzvos to do. Two of them are d'oraisa and three of them are d'rabbanan. The two that are d'oraisa are matzah and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have a mitzvah to eat matzah, but Erev Tochlu matzah. So we have a mitzvah mida oraisa on a Torah level to eat matzah the first night. The second night, we in Chutz Laretz eat matzah mida rabbanan the second night as well. But mida oraisa the first night, we have an obligation, and we have an obligation. Vehigadat Levincha Bayomahu Lemor. We have an obligation to retell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Those are the two mitzvahs that are mida oraisa. Mida rabbanan, we have additional mitzvahs. We drink the dalet kosos. That's a mitzvah mida rabbanan. We eat the maror, which is a mitzvah midrabanan, because technically on a d'oraisa level, the maror only had to be eaten with the Karban Pesach. But nowadays, we don't have the Karban Pesach, so we do eat maror on a d'rabanan level. And we also have a mitzvah midrabanan to recite hala on the night of Pesach, which we do in the course, you know, towards the end of the Seder, whatever your custom is in terms of reciting hala and shul or not, but we recite it at the end of the Seder to fulfill this mitzvah midrabanan. When it comes to the mitzvah of achilas matzah, so we'll talk about that first. That's the first mitzvah that's d'oraisa. So a person has to eat a kezayis of matzah. We generally try to eat two kezayisim because when we make hamotzi, so we're making hamotzi, we make two brachas. We make one bracha of hamotzi, we make one bracha of alachilas matzah. So since we're making two brachas, we have the hamotzi and we have the alachilas matzah, so generally we try to eat one kezayis for hamotzi and one kezayis for the mitzvah of achilas matzah. That mitzvah is a mitzvah midoraisa to eat a kezayis. That mitzvah applies to men and to women as well, even though it is a time-bound mitzvah. It's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. But nevertheless, because there's an equation between not eating chametz and eating matzah, so we say that just like women are not allowed to eat chametz throughout Pesach, so too they're obligated to eat matzah. So women have the same obligation to eat matzah just like men. And like I said, we have to eat a kezayis. How much is a kezayis? It's always a little bit hard to estimate, but approximately a quarter to a third of a hand matzah. So if you have one of those round hand matzahs, a quarter to a third is a kezayis. So two kezayisim would be a half to two thirds, which is a decent size of matzah. If a person has trouble with that, there might be some room to rely on other opinions, but that's the general rule of thumb. And when it comes to a machine matzah, so we estimate approximately 40%, so about a little less than half of a machine matzah is one kezayis. So, you know, about 80% of a machine matzah would be two kezayisim. So we try to eat those two kezayisim. A person should eat those kezayisim within the span of time, which we call kedei achilas pras, which is, as we know, a machlokas, exactly what that span of time is. There are different opinions ranging from 2 to 9 minutes, because this is a daraisa, so we try to be machmir. If you can do it quickly in 2 minutes, great. If not, you know, try to do it between two and four. If a person can only do it in the 9 minutes, so you do what you can do. But you try to eat it as quickly as possible in that time frame. There shouldn't be talking really during that time, even though technically, once you make hamotzi and you take a bite of matzah, just like challah, technically speaking, you can speak, because it's not, you know, I took a bite of the matzah already. I took a bite of the challah. I can, you know, challah during the weekend and matzah on Pesach. So I technically can speak, but obviously if you're speaking, then you're delaying the kedei achilas pras. So it's a good idea to hold off the conversation until everybody eats their kezayisim, or at least one kezayis, to fulfill that mitzvah. And then if you, something needs to be said, then that's fine. We eat the matzah reclining on our left side. And this matzah is for the night of Pesach. We have the custom to use what we call shmura matzah. Now, technically speaking, all matzah that we use on the night of the Seder has to be shmura, right? Now, what does shmura mean? Technically, matzah in general throughout Pesach has to be shmura. However, many poskim hold there's a difference of opinion what exactly shmura means. Does shmura mean that the matzah has to be watched? It comes from the pasuk "Ushmartem es hamatzos." You have to guard the matzos, even though we always have some sort of supervision to ensure kashrus and to ensure that, especially when it comes to Pesach, that it didn't become chametz, it didn't become mixed with chametz. When it comes to matzah, we have a positive obligation to watch the matzah, even if there's no concern about chametz, and we're not worried about that. Still, we have to watch the matzah. There needs to be supervision over this matzah, which is special for the mitzvah. So there is a dispute as to when exactly that shmira has to begin. Many hold that shmira has to begin after the grinding process. That once the flour, once the wheat is ground into flour, so that's when the shmira must begin. And then there's another school of thought that believes that the shmira has to begin from the harvesting. What we call shmura matzah is the second opinion. That's the more strict opinion, that it has to be guarded from the time of the harvesting. And most people, we try to be machmir, at least on the first night, to eat shmura matzah at the night of the Seder, which again means that extra shmira from the time of the harvesting, to eat that matzah at the night of the Seder. Some eat shmura matzah throughout the entire Pesach, because there is an opinion that says that every time you eat a kezayis of matzah throughout Pesach, you fulfill a mitzvah. So some have the minhag to eat shmura matzah throughout Pesach. Some are very careful about it. They only eat shmura matzah meal and shmura matzah farfel. You know, it gets a little bit expensive because shmura is a little bit more expensive, but there is an established minhag like that, and that's what we do at least for the first night. Matzah we know is only made from flour and water because of lechem oni. Matzah has to be lechem oni, a poor man's bread. That's why we don't eat egg matzah. We don't eat any of these other types of matzahs. And obviously, if people are not well or people are sick and they can't consume it, then speak with me privately and we can talk. So that's in terms of the mitzvah of matzah. We also eat another kezayis for korech, which is the sandwich that we eat as part of the Seder. And then for afikomen, we eat yet another kezayis. At the end of the meal, we eat yet another kezayis, and some eat two kezayisim for afikomen. Because there is a question if afikomen is d'oraisa, it might be in place of the Korban Pesach. We don't have a Korban Pesach nowadays. So some say afikomen is in place of the Korban Pesach. It's really a d'oraisa. And that's why some people eat another two kezayisim at the end of for afikomen. By that time, we're already stuffed with our matzah and our maror and our korech and our shulchan orech. So it's sometimes it's hard to get down that kezayis or two, but it's important to make sure we do it. Just one aside when it comes to afikomen. So the halacha is that the person is ideally supposed to eat afikomen before chatzos. That's the way that the korban pesach was eaten. It had to be eaten before chatzos. So we eat the afikomen before chatzos. Sometimes the way the seder is running, it's a little bit challenging to do that, and you don't want to have to rush everybody. And and your wife cooked a nice meal, so you don't want to have to, you don't have to rush the meal. So there is a suggestion of the Avnei Nezer, which is a very creative halachic suggestion, but it's not going to be such a great suggestion if you're full. But basically, the Avnei Nezer says that you can eat a kezayis before chatzos. You eat a kezayis of matzah al tanai, on condition that if we hold like those shitas that say that you have to finish the afikomen by chatzos, then this is my afikomen, and I'm yotzei my mitzvah. And then after that, you continue eating your dessert or your meal or whatever you're up to. But then you have to eat another kezayis of matzah after you're done, because after all, we want the afikomen to be the last thing that we're eating. So we eat another kezayis to get those that if according to those opinions that you can eat an afikomen after chatzos, then this should be my afikomen. So again, it's a creative halachic solution, not such a great solution if you're full, because you're going to end up eating double the amount of afikomen. But that is a suggestion. When it comes to the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the second mitzvah midoraisa, so this mitzvah is to retell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have, of course, the entire section of Magid, where that's essentially what we're doing. This mitzvah is upon everyone, men, women, and women, because they were part of the nes of Yetzias Mitzrayim, this applies to them just like it applies to men. And even though we structure this Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in the way of parent to child, v'higarta levincha, but that's not technically the mitzvah. Even if a person doesn't have any children, or a person is not eating with their children, a person's eating by themselves. You know, just one person has a seder, which I'm sure happens, you know, somewhere in the world. One guy's having a seder by himself. He still has a mitzvah to retell the story of Mitzrayim to himself. And that's part of the mitzvah. So we do it through the Haggadah. It's important also that we understand what we're saying, because it's not just about reciting a text. It's about understanding and reliving the story. So it's important to translate, to look at the English. There's plenty of commentaries. Baruch Hashem, there's so many Haggadahs nowadays. Every year there's, I think, tens of new Haggadahs that are available in all the Sfarim stores, in English, in Hebrew, and everything. So it's certainly something that's easy to do. For women who sometimes are preoccupied during the Haggadah, they have to get the meal ready, or they're taking care of the kids, or whatever the case might be, they should make sure to be there at least for the parrot, for the section called Rabban Gamliel, at the end where we say, if you didn't say these three things, then you're not Yotzei, your obligation. So we make sure to be there at least for the end of Pesach, Matzah, Maror, at the end of Magid. But ideally, she should try to be there for as much of Magid as she can. And if she has to, you know, take care of something, if she can read ahead on her own, that's also a good suggestion. Again, of course, trying to understand what she's reading. If there are children at the Seder, the focus should be on the children. Now, there are many stories of Gedolei Torah, you know, huge Tamidei Chachamim, who, their entire Seder was just, telling stories to the kids. There were no Divrei Torah, there were no Chidushei Torah. Everything was just about their kids, their grandchildren, you know, guests, children who were there, whatever the case is. But if there are kids there at the Seder, there aren't always kids there, but if there are kids there, then the focus should be on the kids, because that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is really to teach the next generation all about Yetzias Mitzrayim. The first mitzvah midrabanan is the Dalet Kosos. We know we drink the Dalet Kosos corresponding to the four Lashonos of Geula, Votzesi, Vitzati, Velokachti, Vigalati, Velokachti. We drink them also, we don't just drink them straight in order, but we drink them corresponding to different sections of the Haggadah. So the first one we know is Kiddush. We also fulfill our mitzvah of Kiddush with that first kos. The second one is over Magid, and we drink it right after Magid. The third one is after benching, and the fourth one is after Hallel. This is important. Wine is preferred. Right? Wine is preferred. The reason why wine is preferred is because part of the mitzvah is to feel the cheirus, to feel the freedom. You know, you could drink all the grape juice you want, you're not going to feel any freedom. But if you drink wine, not that a person has to get inebriated, but if you drink wine, you feel, you know, even the slight effect of alcohol, that gives a person the feeling of cheirus. So it's really ideal for a person to drink four kosos of wine. You don't have to drink 12%. You can drink, there's plenty of good 5% wines out there. You shouldn't really go below 5%, because then it's a question, is it really considered wine? If the alcohol level is so low, so you should try to stay with, you know, try to stay at 5%. But there are plenty of good wines, 5, 6%, that you're not going to get inebriated from, and they'll do the trick. The halacha is you should even push yourself. Even if you don't love wine, and it's a little bit hard for you, you should really push themselves. The Gemara talks about an Amora who would get a headache every Leil Pesach because he had a hard time tolerating the wine, but he pushed himself and he drank four cups of wine and he got a headache. Okay, he got a headache, but that's the mitzvah. You don't have to get sick. If a person's going to get sick and bedridden, that there's no obligation to do. But you know, just a little bit of discomfort, we can try to push ourselves.
Is red wine preferred over white
wine? Yes. Yeah, I was going to mention that. Red wine is preferred over white wine. The reason is that in halachic literature, red wine is considered objectively a better wine, a higher quality wine. And also, the red wine we know symbolizes the blood of the dam of the mitzrim of the korban pesach. So that's why there is a preference to red wine. Some, if they prefer white wine, what they do is they put a little bit of red wine in, and then they put the white wine in, so they kind of mix the wines to make it look red or pinkish, which also will do the trick for that symbolism. If you're doing that, halachically speaking, it's better to put the red in first and then the white. Otherwise, you run into tzoveya issues because you're having the white wine and then you die, and then you're dyeing it with the red. So it's not ideal. It's probably still mutter, but it's better just to put the red wine in first to do the trick. If a person cannot drink 4 cups of wine, and we'll talk about in a minute how big the cups have to be, but if a person cannot drink 4 cups of wine, then the next best thing to do is to dilute the wine with some grape juice. That's the next best thing. So this way you have part wine, part grape juice. Everything is still the grape product, but you still have a little bit of that, alcohol flavor. So you can still taste the alcohol a little bit. That's the next best thing to do. If a person can't even do that, then they can dilute the wine with a small amount of water. You shouldn't dilute it with too much water, because then you're not going to taste the wine. But you can dilute it with a small amount of water. If a person can't even do that, so then they can drink pure grape juice. Obviously, if a person has health issues and cannot drink wine, that's a different story. But we're talking about regular, Baruch Hashem, healthy people. This mitzvah to drink the Dalet Kosos is again upon everyone, men and women. We drink them reclining on our left side. There are shilas, what happens if you don't drink them reclining? So it's a good idea even just to make an announcement before. Everybody should remember to drink them reclining on your left side. In terms of the amount, the cup has to hold at least a revius. Now, that's great, but how much is a revius? So there's a machlokas, of course. There's a question as to how much exactly a revius is. On the upper end, the higher end of the spectrum, we have the Chazon Ish, who says it's about 5 ounces, 5.07 ounces. And the lower end, we have Rav Chaim No, who says it's only about 3 ounces. So you have different opinions. It is a mitzvah midrabanan. So we don't necessarily have to be super machmir, and many poskim are more lenient because of that. The only catch, which doesn't apply this year, but sometimes if the first night of Pesach falls out on Shabbos, on Friday night, so some say you have to use a bigger kos. Why? Because Friday night, the Kiddush is Del Raisa. Even though drinking the wine Friday night is not Del Raisa, but the Kiddush Friday night is Del Raisa, so we have to be a little bit more machmir. But in a regular night of Pesach, like this year, where it doesn't fall out on Friday night, the Dalet Kosos are midrabanan, the Kiddush is midrabanan, and therefore we can be a little bit more lenient. So some say Rav Moshe said it was about 4.42 ounces. Most bechers that you're going to, unless you have an old becher, but most bechers that you're going to buy, in the silver stores are going to be much bigger than that. So, I have a becher at home. It's a normal size becher. It's way more than 5 ounces. It's probably 7-8 ounces. But technically 5 ounces is already the upper limit for the Chazon Ish. Ideally, you should drink the whole cup, right, the entire cup. At least you should drink a Rov Revius. So if you're using an actual Revius cup, let's say I'm using a 4.42 ounce cup, Rav Moshe's Revius. So ideally drink the whole cup, but at least Rov of that Revius. If your cup is larger, like my Becher, I have, let's say, it's 7-8 ounce Becher. So again, the poskim say, ideally, drink the whole thing if you can, if not Rov of the Kos, if not at least Rov of the Revius. You have to drink at least Rov of the Revius, the majority of that Revius, whatever Revius it is. So let's say it's 4.42 ounces, so you're talking, you should be drinking at least a little more than 2.5 ounces of the cup. That's the minimum Rov Revius that you should drink, but ideally, it's better to drink more if possible. There's no mitzvah to use a big Kos, by the way. There's no mitzvah to use a huge Becher. So if you get yourself a nice, those 5 ounce plastic Kiddush cups, again, I'm not saying you should use plastic. It's nice to use a becher, but if you get those 5 ounce cups, they're not all that big. The ones that we have at the Kiddush sometimes, those 5 ounce cups, they're not all that big. So it's there's no mitzvah to dafka drink, an 8 ounce kos every time. Then you're going to get sick. You're going to get drunk. It's going to be a problem. So it's better to drink a smaller kos and drink wine than to drink a bigger kos and have to drink grape juice because, I'm getting sick, I'm getting drunk, and things like that. We try to drink it also quickly, preferably the Rov Revius in 2 gulps, which is not all that much, but we try to drink it quickly. We have to recline, as I mentioned. Our minhag is also that at least for the Baal HaBayis, but many have the minhag for everyone, to pour, someone else should pour the Baal HaBayis. Some people have the minhag that everyone in the household, someone pours you. It's also a symbol, it's a sign of cherus. I will just conclude with maror, just very briefly. Most of us, I imagine, use romaine lettuce for maror. Some people like to use horseradish for maror. The two important points about maror. Number one, there is a shear for maror as well, which means you have to eat a kezayis of maror. It's a mitzvah sachila. It's a mitzvah to eat maror the night of the Seder. It's the Rabbanan. But what we know, anytime there's a mitzvah to eat something, it's a kezayis. So you have to eat a kezayis of maror. If a person just has a few nibbles of romaine lettuce, you know, like a rabbit, so you're not yotze the mitzvah of maror. You know, you may have had a little romaine lettuce, but you have to really eat a kezayis of maror. How much is that? It's a good question. Rav Moshe said that you have to fill an 8x10 area, using romaine leaves, to fill an 8x10 area with romaine leaves, and you have to have one kezayis for maror and one kezayis for korech. So it's important to keep that in mind. If you're eating horseradish, I think they say about ground grated horseradish is about 1 fluid ounce of grated horseradish is considered a kezayis. You have to make sure you're eating the kezayis to fulfill the mitzvah. And additionally, if you're using lettuce, to make sure that it's checked properly for insect infestation, which we discussed in a different context, but to make sure either you're checking it, you know, by the light, washing it, checking it by the light to make sure that there are no insects, or you're buying pre-checked lettuce to make sure there are no insects. I myself, my job growing up was to check the lettuce before the Seder. And I would spend, you know, hours, Erev Pesach, checking all the lettuce for everyone at the Seder. And almost every single year I found bugs. Almost every single year. In good lettuce. Regular, good, Andy Boy, nice lettuce. So you really have to check and make sure that there are no bugs in the lettuce. And hopefully we'll all have a Chakosha v'Sameach and be able to be Mekayim the Mitzvah here. Hopefully in Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh soon enough.
Thank you.